Hello.
Hello.
Oh my goodness, we're back.
We're back. Did you miss us?
I mean,
We missed us.
I missed us desperately.
Because Christy and I didn't talk the entire time.
No.
Because, no, we don't talk unless it's on the podcast.
Zero communication
I don't
at
even know where she is right now.
all.
Are you still in Arizona?
In Arizona. Oh my God.
You were there for a minute.
I was there for a long, long time.
You sure were. Yeah.
And I did only old people things and I got really into bingo. So
She did.
that's who I am now.
I mean, so it's funny because we did our like respective like Christmas things, but because Christy's people are far away from where she is, that it involved an extended to make it
Yeah.
worth it. And she was slowly, listeners, descending into this like where she was maybe 80 or something.
Like, here are all the old people things I did. I went and I made cards, like gift cards.
You made gift cards. Did
We
they have
make,
money on them or?
no, they're you would be like, here is a card to go along with your gift, but I made it instead of just purchasing it from,
So it's a card.
it's a card.
Yes.
And yeah, that was I went to two of those
Oh,
with my
whoa.
mom. We played bingo a lot. My dad won a lot of money. My mom and I won a blanket, which she still has, obviously.
You have to share
But
it. Seems kind of
you know what? My favorite part about bingo is the dabbers, the like markers that you use. And so I wanted to like mark everything. And it's like, I don't think I care so much about the bingo as I want to just mark circles on stuff.
She was texting me this stuff with pictures and was like, "Look how perfect my circle is." And I was like, "I think you need to come back home now."
I learned how to play bocce ball, which I am
Which I thought you had to be over the age, like legally,
legally. I think
over
you
the
are
age of
supposed to be.
70 to
I am
play.
very bad at it. So I think maybe also physiologically you should be old to play it.
Mentally, you have to be retired to be able to get the game. It's a part of it.
Was,
And
yeah.
you watched horses for a while. I remember that. Because you
We
go,
saw
we're gonna
wild
go look
horses.
for we're gonna go look for
We
horses. And I
went,
was
we saw wild horses. This was pretty cool. There's a national forest near my parents' house, and they have wild horses, like actual wild horses running around. So we went twice. We saw them one time. They were very, like, I mean, it was
elusive.
exciting because I'm me. We also saw an otter in the river, and that was even better. And for me, not for my parents. And I made us stop and watch that otter for a long time.
Yeah, and they just gave her an AARP card and were
Here
like, you're in. You're done.
you
You don't have to do anything else. But I will say, listeners, she presented these excursions, if I will call them that, in a way that is not how she's explaining them. So at one stage she goes, I'm gonna go try to find horses. Now she's in Arizona, and I was like, I'm sure that's not like a problem.
Sure, they have horses.
Like you can just, so she didn't say I'm going to this park to find wild. She did it later,
I
but
did. I
in the
explained it
end,
later, but I didn't upfront.
so, and so everyone in this group chat was like, can you not just like go to a farm? Like, are they, I mean, they're not.
Also, like for a purpose, are you going to find a horse to purchase or to ride, or what is
Right.
happening?
They're not some like elusive dodo bird or anything. They're around. You can find them. So, and then she would say, I'm going to bingo. And I was like, oh, like, are
Like,
you, do you have drinks or like you're just, and then she showed me the card and we'll post it. It looked like a math dissertation.
is so intense. Bingo is so intense because there's multiple different types of games, and so some of it is like normal bingo, like however many in a row or whatever. Some of it is like you have to create a shape on the bingo card. Some of it is blackout. So you have to fill all of the squares in the bingo card. I mean,
Your thing, I mean, that, yeah, but you had like 14 cards.
Oh, yeah. No, we have so many. There are so many games. Also, and here's, I am not like a skilled bingo player because I needed to have one bingo sheet in front of me ever. But there were people at our table who had like four and they would play all four of them. And I was like, how can you look at all of those numbers? I just felt like I was going to go cross-eyed at some point, but people get intense about their bingo.
They do when you can win a blanket that you can share with somebody.
It's a great prize.
Isn't it to share between two people? Is it big enough to just cut in two?
I love it when you share things with somebody you don't live with.
Yeah, you're not sharing it. You just gave it to them.
When I was in my early 20s, like right after I graduated from college, two of my friends and I, who, mind you, they lived together and I did not live with them. The three of us all went in and bought one of those Guitar Hero games.
Mm-hmm.
But like,
I think it's just called the Guitar Hero.
But we had to buy like the console and.
Oh yeah, it was a whole production.
It was a whole thing. So that's why we split it between the three of us. Cause we were, you know, first year, seventh grade teachers, but we had to like share custody. Cause so they would get 2 weeks and then I would get a week and then they would get 2 weeks.
Did you have to play by yourself?
Yes.
Aw. Don't love that.
I know. It was really.
I need to call Kevin up to talk about community again. I love that they could have just invited you over, but instead they're like, well, here you go.
I know, right? Well, we only had one guitar. So.
Oh. I know, but you could still watch. Like, heckle, as you said. You do.
Yeah, heckle. Or like later on there was Rock Band and you had like drums and all of that.
I think
did you ever play that?
I did, and actually I played it when I was, so I lived in Belfast for a year, and it was really funny because we lived with, I say we because it was me and my friend Susie and then just a bunch of boys. And I was only there some of the time because I was out doing field work, but the times that I was there, it was like a big discussion about, like, at one stage they wanted to get the sports channels, but like I was paying rent and paying right. for stuff. And I was like, I'm not going to pay for that. Sure. But it got brought up that they were going to get this, that Guitar Hero. And I said, well, I might pay for that.
You're like, okay, that'll buy, yeah.
But that's my prime Guitar Hero days. And like my tryout for the band, I was not good at it.
There was a period of time when I was really obsessed with Guitar Hero. And I remember when I finally got all the way through Freebird. And let me tell you, there is no greater high than like winning Freebird on Guitar
Hero. Than Freebird.
But
why people yell it all
much
the time,
like really. Chandler on Friends afterwards, I couldn't move my hand out of a weird claw position.
The things we do for Freebird, the things we do for Lynyrd Skynyrd. Oh no, I was never. You heard my position on games. I'm just, it's never been.
I mean, same. Except for, like, there's been a couple of times when...
I feel like this one drew you in.
This is, yeah. This one really sucked me in because I really wanted to just become a rock star. I will
say
the drums are way harder. And that one I gave up on instantly. I was like, there's never a place where I'm going to be a drummer.
I don't think I ever saw the drums in action. Like,
yeah, it's hard. There's a pedal and everything.
No, that's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much work. And this is why I'm a failed musician that never got the start. I just love the, I will forever remember the phrase, so you play basketball, right? And I said, yeah. And she was like, you should probably keep doing that. And that was my tryout for the band.
This is why I just stayed a groupie.
I know. I mean, but like, yeah, I was in middle school. I was like, you could have let me. But I think she just wanted to make sure I had something. Because this was clearly not
it. This is clearly not it. Yeah. It's funny because there's two musicians in my family. my mom and then my niece, Lauren, and they're both really skilled, but like none of the rest of us got the machine at all. And my mom is real upset about it.
Yeah. My brother is like a virtuoso. Like he's an actual probably like savant or whatever on the guitar. He taught himself to play piano just like by himself.
How do you do that?
We got it. We inherited this big ass piano that we had for like a year and he just like sat down and did it.
We had a piano my entire life. And
you didn't teach yourself.
I even took lessons. It was not good.
Well, he tried to teach me guitar and I just like, you know, and I said, that's fine. Like we can
have different skills. It's okay. I got
slammed for this in middle school. I've accepted.
Leah and I will just be snobby about what music we listen to.
Oh, now. Right. That's right. Now we'll take you down. I was reminiscing with a friend of mine about not the first time at all. How I don't know how to put this in a way that is not legally compromising us. One of the first times that I gathered together with a group of people and we were communing with each other. That sounds sexy. It's not. That's not what I meant. We were having a drink. Let's just say that. We were having a drink. Well, I had participated in the drinking and Tom Petty came on. And I was probably like 30 something. And it was when I was in Scotland. And I went on this tirade about Tom Petty. Of which, keep in mind, I like Tom Petty very much. But like, he's not someone that I've had to real ride or die with. But Free Falling or something came on. And I just was like, oh my gosh. This is the greatest artist of our lifetime. And everyone was just looking at me like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I got so into it. I said I wouldn't be friends with people if they didn't at that moment tell me that Tom Petty was amazing.
That's amazing. That's my favorite story.
And then afterwards, I like was like, Tom Petty? I mean, I don't even think he would have approved. It was aggressive. And aggressive is not really my go-to all the time with that particular brand of drinking, if we want to call it that. But it was just like straight psychotic breakdown about Tom Petty. So I may not be able to play it, but I know when I like it.
No. Yeah, same. Well, hey guys, this might not be clear, but this is Theology on the Rocks. I just really didn't say that. So if you don't know what you're listening to, we're supposed to talk about theology while we drink.
We are.
And we're drinking the wrong thing because it's Burns Night, but neither of us wanted to drink whiskey today, so we're drinking.
I totally forgot about that until you, not Burns Night, but that we should be drinking whiskey. Oh well, but you can't right now.
Yeah,
she's pregnant, guys. You've heard it first here. JK.
I have a JK.
Christie's relatives that are listening. She's not
very much not.
Can you imagine if they just stopped it after that and then just started calling each other?
It's just like, oh my god, the drama. You know what? I wouldn't be surprised because that's a fairly common response in our family. Is we just like freak out and call all of the other members and not talk to the person.
I'll just put the description: Christy is not pregnant. The one where she's not pregnant.
The one where Christy's not pregnant. Yeah, I have an ear infection because I'm 8 years old, as well as being 80 years old.
She's so complex, guys. So complex.
So we're drinking seltzers. Which seltzer are you drinking?
I am drinking Bud Lights. She just opened hers. They have a seltzer that's like 8%. It's a high octane seltzer. And
I haven't tried it. Is it good?
It is. It's my favorite of the seltzers. However, I will say is there's always one seltzer and a seltzer pack, which I think talked about this on the podcast, that you don't like.
Yeah.
And there was like a berry, a lime, and then a blood orange. And I was happy with that. Loved them all. They inserted in a pineapple.
And you don't like pineapple.
Well, I will eat a pineapple. Like, it's not one of my like bad list of food.
Right.
I did go to the eye doctor today, and she was like, oh, like, you know, your eyes look great. It means, you know, usually that you're eating greens and drinking lots of water. And I just sat there. I was like, okay.
Leah lied to her eye doctor today. So
I did not. I didn't lie. She said it. And I just
sat there. She said things and you didn't correct her.
She was like, your eyes look really good. She just kept telling me they looked really good. Thank you very much. But then she would say reasons why they look good, like not being in the sun a lot, eating greens and drinking water. And I just was like, okay. Okay. Yeah. I'll wear sunglasses more. And so anyway.
Anyway, so you have a pineapple one.
I have but pineapple's not in the bad list. And as a seltzer, it's a bit heartburny. I will say. I drink it.
That's fair. My least favorite is mango, and there's always mango.
I feel like that's adjacent to this. Like, it would be heartburny to me probably too.
I don't like mango. I don't like mango flavored things. I don't like mango itself as a fruit. I don't know why. I don't find it.
F you, mango.
Yeah.
Take that.
But do you like
avocado? Because then you can still have your millennial card.
Yes, I do. I got a like a giant black cherry white claw. So sweet.
Yeah, and also I will say it wasn't just because Christy's pregnant that we're doing this. Ooh. Oh, I did it again.
Oh my god, I just spilled it all down my shirt.
Y'all, she has an ear infection. Quit being dramatic. Okay.
It's like, I'm soaking. It's fine. It was my first sip too.
I'm sorry. But it was also because I saw on the interwebs, it was something about a girl who was doing dry January, but she decided that seltzers were okay, and it was like her theses on the wall about why it was okay. And I mean, ultimately, I would say there's alcohol in it, so I guess. But you know, everyone do your own thing. I don't give a flying. I've never done it, but I will say, Christy and I then got into a discussion. So that's why we're doing seltzers, because that girl who was just like,
"It's an hour."
My 99 theses right here, but never once did she address that there was alcohol in it.
I've heard of this before, though. People doing dry January but having like a really weird exception. Or somebody was like, you can only drink clear alcohol. And I was like,
yes, I've done that.
That is like the worst of the alcohols. So.
I had a friend who did it on the weekends. Here's what I'll say. You know your aunties, whatever works for you. And if you want to do it, we support you.
Yeah.
It was more just how intense she was about defending it that made me take notice. Like, if she just been like, hey, this is my exception, I would have been like, okay, cool, whatever you do. But like, you know, good for you for all the rest. But she just was like, no.
Let me write a thesis about this.
Here is my defense. Screw your prosecution. The end. Goodbye. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's also fine. So she clearly gotten some flack for it.
Yeah,
clearly. And anyway, we just decided to go with the seltzer in honor of this girl. This
whole concept. So seltzer is tonight. And also griping is tonight, is what we're...
Well, and I think it segues really well, because one of the things, Christy and I, because as we were talking about what we were drinking, I said, you know, doing dry January is the thing because it's January.
Yeah.
And in North Carolina, it's been raining for the past 3 days straight. And when I say straight, I mean, it hasn't stopped at all. And it's terrible if you have dogs. I mean, it's even worse, but like, it's January. Nothing good happens minus MLK Day, which, you know, is great, but like, then it's just January.
It's just January. January is just, it's the month we should just all take off, and we should stay home and not have like responsibilities really.
And I don't want to leave the house ever again.
Like, none of us can actually do those things because late stage capitalism. But like, that's what should be happening, because we are all at our worst in January. I saw something that was like, why is the new year in January? Because it's the worst time. Like, we're exhausted from the holidays. It's the middle of winter. And, like, none of us want to do anything. We just want to stay home. And it's always gross outside.
It's always gross. And it's also just, like, you know, they want you to make all these, like, resolutions that involve. Yeah,
don't do that in January. Do that in July.
Yeah. Your two aunties love July. We are fully endorsing of July.
Like, I want to be a new person in July. I'm like,
me too.
Happy or June, and optimistic, and I have good feelings about life in July. That's 100%. When I should start my resolutions or, like, try new things. In January? No. No.
I wish Seltzer Girl had just said one of her theses being it's January, and I would have been like, yeah, no, that's fine. Like, I agree. And, like, if you're doing dry January, good.
Yes,
keep it up. You're doing good work. Your liver's happy. But, man, and it gets dark. In the Scottish regions, whew,
it's just dark all the time.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know. I just feel like this month is also 7,000 days long. It just
tell this story about your student.
Oh my gosh. So, not one, not two, several students have. We just finished week two. So, this is the very beginning of the semester. And several students have come up to me in a sheer panic, like sweat induced panic. And they have said, oh my God, I just realized that this assignment is due today. And I was like, what assignment would I make due week one, week two?
And you're a monster.
They'll point to it and they'll be like, look, our first paper is due today. And I'm like, that is the most unreasonable thing I could ever think to do in a class, firstly. But, like, no, it's not. But then they insist. They're like, see, it says the 19th or the 23rd or whatever. And then I realized that they were pointing to something that's due in February. But it's been January for so long that we actually now think it's so February. Long. And so they're like, today is the 19th and that's the 19th and it must be February because it's been 1 million years. And I'm like,
we're on January 55.
It's still January. I know, like, January is always hard, and especially, like, I think, I don't know if you feel this way, but starting out spring semester is always worse than starting fall semester too. Because you're just already like, I don't know if I can, like,
grab. Well, and the idea that Christmas is a break.
Yeah.
Is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. You don't get a break. You, like, you're busy, you know. But then, like, somehow this January, this semester, it just feels like everyone is even worse. Like, we're all just, like, wandering aimlessly and, like, not sure what is up or down,
just waiting for February.
Just like, it's not February 19th, and I'm like, no.
Although I have a book due in April, so it can keep being January for some time. I'm not gonna lie.
You're like, please don't make it February.
As soon as it hits February, I'm gonna be like, no. It's not like February the sun comes out and it's like, ooh, I'm back again.
Right. No, February.
Maybe in Florida, but not here. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's still Florida winter is weird because it's like sometimes it actually gets Florida cold. I say Florida cold because, like, temperature wise, it's still a lot warmer than everywhere else, but it feels cold. And all the Floridians are, like, in parkas and stuff. But, like, sometimes it's 80. And you're, and it's like
60 degrees
right now. I'm in Florida again, and it's very confusing, and I don't really know what to do about it.
I mean, enjoy it.
I do enjoy, yeah, because, like, my friends in Colorado are like, it's negative 12, and I'm like, oh, cool.
I'm somewhere in the middle, but lean more towards you than that because that sounds insane. It was 70 today, and despite the torrential downpour, and I was like, okay. I can live through this, but
at least it's not freezing.
So January, we decided on this podcast, there was a lot of things that we noticed that we kept talking to each other about that were gripes and complaints. Some of them theologically leaning, some of them academic leaning, some of them simply pop culture leaning. But we thought, because you are our audience and you're our friends, that we were going to drink 8% seltzer and tell you what we're pissed off about because it's January. And then next week we'll go back.
We'll go back to the delightfulness of ourselves and the opposite.
I mean, I still think the gripes will be delightful.
They are. We're always delightful no matter what, but
I'm like the hype man over here. Who is the guy with the clock around his neck?
Flava Flav?
Flava Flav. I'm the Flava Flav of our group. Who'd have thought? Well, cheers, Christy, to the cheers. Seltzer.
Cheers to the seltzer and to the griping. What is your first gripe that you want to bring up?
My first gripe that I am reading about Christian nationalism right now, you'd think, but that's not my first gripe. My first gripe is, so a thing that's been happening, I'm trying to be very careful about previous institutions I've worked to not getting sued. So what I will say is that I have a very similar situation at my previous institution to what is being described. Yeah. So we will leave it at that. So what I'm going to describe is closures of humanities / arts and science departments, which sometimes hold the same subjects. And it happened in West Virginia. Well, actually, let me back up. It happened at a where they shut down an entire HBCU, which stands for Historically Black College or University, in North Carolina. And it was a really big deal because it was post-COVID. It wasn't making a lot of money. I can't remember the name of it right now, which is a shame, but I'll find it and put it up. Yeah. And all these celebrities came out to try to help, predominantly African-American celebrities, to try to keep it going. And it shut. And they, when they talked about why it shut, it was financial. And so that was a liberal arts school. And I was like, you know, that's the thing that happens. It's tough because liberal arts schools, you know, I've worked for state schools and liberal arts schools.
Yes.
They have to make money. Like
it's hard for the liberal arts schools unless they have like historical endowments and stuff like that.
Yes. The endowments are what keeps it afloat when things like numbers are always going to dip up and down, but like the endowments are kind of what balances it all out. So if you don't have those endowments, you don't have that. The state schools at least, the seltzer's hit me. The state schools at least have the state to kind of balance them where endowments don't hit the same way. But here's what's happening now, and this is sort of as someone who keeps up with higher ed, is that now the state schools are kind of going down this route. And so one of the first ones I heard was West Virginia.
Right. Yeah.
And most recently this week, and last week, I will say UNC, which is in the UNC system, Greensboro, they are shutting down programs in it's they have a list, but they I don't think they've named them as of yet, but they've had their head of arts and sciences resign, who is in anthropology today or yesterday, but anyway, and resigned because of just like this sort of injustice that's happening, because what happens is that you get this hierarchy of, and those of you going into higher ed need to know this, like whether you're at a state school or not, you get like, you have your dean that's maybe over your subject, then you maybe have a dean that's over a wider college, and then you get some admin maybe up and about, and then you get a provost, which is kind of like a VP. You can correct me, Christy, at any stage. A president who is a figure, but is also there to kind of raise money and do stuff like that. And then you get the board of trustees, and the board of trustees are really like the end all be all, because they are the ones who
they make a lot more decisions than I think we all understand.
Yes.
Or especially the wider public understands. And the amount of control the Board of Trustees has over universities and colleges, I personally think is kind of concerning, because they aren't necessarily qualified to make those decisions.
No. And I can say I've looked at the makeup of several Board of Trustees, and it's not that they're incapable people. They're usually
very successful people. They're usually business people though. And so the idea is that they're going to run the school like a business, which is not, I think, fundamentally how schools should be run to begin with. And I do want to say, and again, like we are speaking in pretty broad terms right now, sometimes boards are doing really important work, and sometimes they have a level of kind of accountability and things like that that are really good and solid. And so you have a really good board of trustees that is doing what a board of trustees should be doing, which is like making sure that there's not like a dictatorship going on at the school, you know?
Right.
But sometimes it's like, again, like I said, we get into this mindset, like a school should be a for-profit business model,
yep,
instead of an educational system like it actually should be. And that's when it starts to run into these like, okay, well, this department isn't profitable, so we're going to cut it.
That's right. Yeah. But I think the business people are running it the way that, and as I said, a lot of them are very successful local business people, but mm-hmm. they're running it like a business. And what ends up happening is not only the sort of idealistic version of education, but also the logistical stuff. Like at one of these institutions that I'd looked at, they cut chemistry because it only had a few, they were basing on majors. Mm-hmm. It didn't have a lot of majors. Well, they had to bring chemistry back because they let I don't know if it was a guy or a girl. They let the person go.
Yeah.
And then they had to bring the person back because they realized that, hey, you know who has to take chemistry? Nurses.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's one of our biggest majors.
Yeah. Understanding how departments work together. And this is why it's so important for us to think about education outside of a business mindset. Like we've gotten so, not to say it again, but like late stage capitalism is really not doing us any favors. Like we've gotten
your word of the day here.
We've gotten so focused on whether stuff makes money that we've lost any kind of sense of like, what is value, that what things hold value that aren't necessarily profit, or also how do things work in a more foundational kind of way. And so like, yeah, if we cut programs like English or like that chemistry program or whatever, and you don't think it past, you know, the budget to realize like, oh, everyone needs to learn how to read and write in ways that are communicating important ideas. And oftentimes those are things that are specific to departments or to majors or whatever, but the English department is still doing the bulk of that work. Mm-hmm. And even though they might not have as many majors, that doesn't mean they're not teaching students, especially because it's usually a gen ed, you know?
That's right. Yeah.
And so, and then like you said, like the chemistry is going to be something that other students, other majors have to take. So you can't just take into account like how many chemistry majors are there. You also think about like, okay, so how many students are these teachers actually teaching? And how do we understand those kinds of like interconnections, you know?
Yeah. Like I have a friend who teaches math, which is oftentimes actually at Greensboro, is one of the ones they think is going to get cut. But then you need to take math to do the STEM stuff, which yeah. they're investing in.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you don't see value in math as a subject, but like you're promoting medicine.
Mm-hmm. And then what ends up happening, and this is another whole horrible issue, is that they just start getting a bunch of adjuncts to teach these yep. classes. And let me just tell you what it's like to be an adjunct, because I think we have old, outdated understandings of professors at colleges and universities that it's like this well-paying cushy job, and it's not anywhere generally, but when you're an adjunct, you're getting paid like you know, I think averages around 3,000 per semester.
I mean, that's pretty good
and that's higher than I know at several institutions. So
if you're only doing one class, I guess.
But if you get one class and you're going to get $3,000 for that semester, which is like 4 months, you know, and that is not enough money to survive, you know.
No.
So now you have to cobble together enough adjunct positions. And usually what ends up happening is that person is going to be working at multiple institutions teaching, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 classes per semester, driving between places. So they can't have office hours. They have to cut all sorts of work they would be doing with students because they don't have the time or the bandwidth for it. And then you end up with people who
have they struggle. Like the adjuncts that at the institutions I've been to have struggled, and it's not their fault.
It's not their fault. And it's a really terrible setup that's hurting professors. It's hurting students. It's hurting the whole entire community, because what a professor's job is should be that we have enough time and bandwidth to meet with students, to like be on campus for questions and things like that, or you know, available in some way. But and also,
this is, by the way, not to adjunct shame, because Christy and I have both
This is very pro adjunct, because this is not
we both are adjuncting alongside our main
and I've been an adjunct for like 10 years now on top of, so, but like, you just don't, you don't have time to do the things that you would do if you were a full-time employed professor. And then you have to start cutting things that are really important. And one of the other things you're cutting usually is continuing to stay up in your field. And so then you start falling behind in what's going on, and then you become less and less employable full time because you aren't up on stuff. You haven't been, and it's just like this really horrific cycle. And again, what you're getting then is a less education, and the students are suffering. The people are suffering. Like, it's just,
and you're being used,
and you're being used. And it's all because the college is like, oh, you know, there's not enough majors for this, even though we need to have the classes.
Yeah. And UNCG, they have a list of stuff they're cutting, and it looks like they're cutting based on majors numbers, which, you know, is, you know, a lot. Like, the names that I've seen, I don't think they have a definitive list.
Think it's been decided yet. And I will say too, we posted this on our Instagram yesterday, but there is a petition to set to save the religion department, which I'll get into in a second why I think that's particularly important. But we'll put the link for that petition on this podcast as well. Because
I think it's shocking too. This is what shocks me. One, that it's in my state, and actually I've had friends that I worked with at Glasgow that were strong advocates of UNCG, and friends who went to UNCG.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's a state school. So you say, and hear me out, because I've been on financial boards and stuff because I was head of department for a while. I'm logical when it comes to money and numbers. I get that you have to do that, but I think there's more creative ways than just cutting stuff. Yes. And also what I've experienced in my career from Board of Trustees, and this is my experience, is that because it's not their full-time job. Most people are just doing this volunteer. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, they don't maybe keep up to date with what's happening and the numbers and what's not doing well until it's too late.
Yep.
And then when it's too late, they just start slicing.
They just start cutting. Yeah. Slashing.
What's not quote productive.
Yep.
And that's what we're seeing. And there is a danger, because this is not just like a DeSantis, like whatever thing of, you know, censoring. This is just a loss of entire departments.
And the loss of the work they're doing. But it's also, and I think this is the other main thing that I really want to stress, is that it's not just that we're like, oh, we're religion professors, so we want jobs for ourselves or whatever. But like,
it's also
that. I mean, it is that too. Like,
Greensboro's not that far away.
but like, primarily, I think that there's an incredible danger that's happening in how much we have devalued the humanities as our society in general, and religion even more specifically, because it's really damaging to tell students or to tell people in general that the only thing you're getting from a college degree is a job.
Yep.
It's really damaging to say that the only priority you should be getting from a college degree is to get some kind of job, because there's an amount of learning not just learning facts or learning skills or whatever that's happening, but it's also learning how to think critically, uh-huh. how to consume information. So like when you're reading news reports or Facebook posts or, you know, hearing TikToks or whatever, that you can think critically, like, is this true? Is this, you know, maybe clickbait or whatever, so that you can spot and avoid lies and other things that, you know, propaganda. And
see things in like a 360 way, 365 way.
And it helps us to learn how to communicate well. It helps us to learn history and how to understand people that we won't encounter otherwise. You know, it helps us in like religion. There's so much about our world that is directly involved with religious conversation, either political movements that are about religion or, you know, again, what's going on in Palestine right now has a lot to do with religion. And other parts of the world have these big events happening religiously. America is an incredibly religious nation that doesn't know a lot about religion, and that's so dangerous. Mm-hmm. And we need to emphasize religious literacy. I was just talking about this in class today, so I'm a little like,
I was gonna say, if you can see me, I'm waving my preach hand,
right? Like, we need to know what religions actually are, what they teach. We need to be able to identify, like, when a person is Sikh versus Muslim, or what it means to talk about fundamentalism in religion. All of those conversations would be for the betterment of society, so that we don't fall into fascism or horrible other kinds of, you know, dictatorships or whatever. But we've been saying for 20 however years that the only valuable degrees at college are STEM degrees, and that if you get an English major degree, you're going to be working at McDonald's, which is a whole other, you know, like,
it's also some society. I agree with you completely, but I think, like, my husband Stuart's in IT, and I mean, mm-hmm. It's not just about what the young people see as value, it's what society has put value on.
You know? Well, I mean, it is true. Like, that there are some degrees that will lead to either more stable or more financially viable jobs than others. But I just wish that we could have a better understanding of why, like, an English major doesn't have to become a teacher.
Right.
You can go into mm-hmm. business as an English major, because you can learn skills at your job, you know? And you can maybe do English and computer science and then go into IT, but now you're better at communicating. Mm-hmm. I read an article, I can't remember where it was, but it was talking about how the humanities really help with cybersecurity, because people who've studied the humanities are better able to identify cybersecurity risks and things like that. Mm. And it's like, yeah, like, we actually would be better at all of these other good jobs if we also emphasized these classes. And maybe you don't even have to major in them, but you should be able to take them, you know.
Yeah.
It should be like easy access to a liberal arts degree, where you're gonna get a major in computer information or whatever, but you're gonna also take English and religion and all these other classes that actually do help.
And for now, that's at a lot of places you can, but we're seeing it kind of disappear.
Yeah.
And I think that you're right, is that you need, it's not just getting a pamphlet that says, here's all the jobs you can have as a religion major. It's actually changing society and saying, which sounds lofty, but I'm not lofty at all. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, absolutely. Being like, you can be a, you know, a border control agent or a mm-hmm. federal FBI person if you have a degree in, I don't know, like, anthropology or even, you know, religion, because you have an understanding because you took these humanities courses about what humanity is about, how mm-hmm. they act. You probably took some psych classes. Like,
you understand cultural norms better.
Exactly. Norm difference. Why is this person behaving the way they are? Is it because they're a certain religion? You know, not just because they're sketchy as whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm really trying today to not curse. I've been cursing.
I know. We're both kids.
I noticed it last night. I said the F word like 15 times. And I'm not like a super cursor, but it was just like it came out and it just felt like it needed to be there.
Yeah, so I know. It punctuates. You know, it's what a sign of intelligence is people who curse more or something.
I mean, I don't know, but I think
my undergrad advisor posts this article probably twice a year because she curses all the time. And it's one of my favorite things about her, but she's always like, see?
I mean, I do think it's sort of a sloppy fill-in word, but I think it's like a sloppy fill-in word that really emphasizes something.
Yeah.
And my favorite word of choice is the F word. So I'm just like, can you believe that F and blah, 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 yep. The F thing. So it's like, instead of saying, it's just like, really?
Yep.
Really?
I agree. Yeah.
That's what my liberal arts degree got me, guys. But yeah, so that's my gripe. I hate seeing it. These state schools, it really bothers me because you're cutting things like history and you're cutting things like English. And it's like, you know, is AI or ChatGPT going to replace you being able to write something? I mean, maybe, but like, it's not going to be able to insert history in your brain so that you know when we're repeating it.
Right. That's the thing. It's like, we would be in such a better position to identify when stuff is AI, you know, or we would be able to identify when stuff is just flat out wrong if we had the critical thinking skills that come with
humanity. And to use it in a way that is productive, because you probably can. I mean, I haven't, but heck, if it'll write me a resume.
Well, there is really great. Our friend Susie just sent us, her brother did like a chat
show. Oh, yeah.
Poems so for Burns Night, and so one of them is about Iron Brew, and it was really creative and fun, but like I think there's plenty of good uses for those things, but I also think that we need to be able to say like enough is enough, or here are the dangers. It's like that poster, which is one of my favorites, but it's like science can tell us how to clone a T-Rex, the humans can tell us why that's a bad idea.
Yep. It's fantastic. I've seen it on so many doors. It's so great.
I love it so much. I just think, again, and like, I'm so appreciative for the science people, my science friends, like, please don't hear me being critical of science. I think it's so important. I think the IT is so important. I depend on IT people immensely. I think that all of these fields are really important, but I think that ultimately, everyone, regardless of what field you're going into, benefits from the humanities being uplifted and supported and not cut.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's questions that even Stuart has brought me about IT where he doesn't understand. And I'm like, oh, well, that sounds like that probably is because of X, Y, and Z, because it's a humanities question.
Yeah.
It's not an IT question. And so I think there is, you know, and absolutely, we're not. Trust me, my mom's a nurse and my husband's in IT.
Yeah,
like we are, and my dad's has an MBA. So like, we're surrounded by it.
And I love all of those people. And I even also would advocate for like, you know, if you're going to trade school, that you have some ability to take humanities courses. Like, I wish that we would realize how important they are, get back to old school ways of thinking and be like, the pinnacle of study, the most important part of education is what's going on in humanities.
I remember when I was at my previous institution, the nurses came to the religion department and said, could you do a class on like bedside
manner? Yeah.
Like how to interact. And it wasn't necessarily religious bedside manner. It was just like compassion pastoral care.
How to be more pastoral to people. A lot of my students are going into healthcare and I talk to them all the time. Like, you're going to encounter people who have, you know, specific religious requirements or feelings about procedures. And like, if you're able to understand and have compassion for those things, you're going to be so much better with your patients.
Yeah.
And not just that you know all of those facts, but you're just like aware of how religion impacts people, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like I was a chaplain in a hospital and it was such an interesting kind of case study in what we've been talking about, which is like the anytime there was something emotional that happened, the doctors, and this is not all doctors, I should say, but some doctors would call me and they were like, that they're getting emotional. And I was like, are they getting emotional? And they'd be like, Muslim or something. And I would be like, so they're just emotional.
Yeah, just emotional.
they're feeling things.
They're having a feeling. And
you exited stage right real fast. And it would be like, and then the social worker would show up and we'd be like, and she'd be like, he just said they had feelings. And I was like, okay, we're going in. Because there's feelings involved. So, and I will say, like, that's not 100%. And the nurses are actually, I think, very good at having been in the hospital very recently. Their bedside manner was amazing. But, like, they're learning good. But, yeah, so, but as a chaplain, it was a good example of that where they were just like, well, they're crying. And I can't fix crying. So I'd be like, okay, like, what religion are they? Don't know. Okay, cool. Social worker comes up. Is there some problem that I need to investigate? Not sure. They're crying. And I was like, okay, so you just go on to the next thing and we'll go in here. Wait, Christy. Okay, we'll put a bow on it there because you need to tell me what your gripe is.
Oh, yes. My gripe. Okay. So my gripe is, it's so I don't know how to transition from my fury about.
I know. I feel like this is, like, I thought I was griping about it, but I think this is maybe Christy's gripe.
I think this is like a very mutual gripe. But no, yeah. So my gripe today is the Oscars.
Yeah.
And I want to say a few things because the Oscars in general.
Take it away.
Are terrible. It's just like the whole thing is. I was on Threads.
Why do you think it's terrible though?
I'm going to explain it. I was on Threads today. And this is like.
You answered like a professor.
I stopped teaching. I came home. I stopped teaching. I went to the pharmacy to pick up my medication.
It makes me laugh.
My white cloth. I bought all of it together.
I hope it was something like anti-anxiety.
And then I came home. So I'm still like, but
you're fine. I recognize it. That's why.
So I was on Threads because if you don't know, we do have a Threads account. Theology.
I didn't
Rocks.
Know. That.
Okay. And I've given up on formerly Twitter because it's a cesspool. But I saw this thread about how the Academy for the Oscars is set up. And it was like, it was like the epitome of continued systemic racism happening. Because it's like, here's how much percent is like still white. And they give these kind of nods to women and people of color so that they can say like, look, we're so diverse, but like genuinely it's just still not. But like it also, it feels like there are certain things that they look for. And then there's other stuff that they're like, that is clearly too popular and therefore it must be trash. So we can't give it an Oscar, which is
funny because Oppenheimer is nominated for a bunch.
Oppenheimer fits all of their boxes. Like it's.
No, I know. It's just, it was popular.
Like, exactly. Yeah. Well, it was popular. Yeah. But they're
not pop.
It's like the, you know, it's the
historical drama,
white boy intelligent popular.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
But like, and I'm you
I like
know
that
this,
you said it real fast.
So you know this about me. I don't really like Marvel movies or superhero movies or anything like that. I'm not really into it.
We're friends.
But and so like this is not me being like Marvel movies deserve an Oscar. But like, just because they're Marvel movies doesn't mean that there's not artistic value there.
100,
but
yeah.
Obviously, I'm also talking about Barbie because that's one of the like kind of shining examples. And for Barbie, America Ferrera was nominated, which is amazing. And I'm so happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
But she did an amazing job. And Ryan Gosling was nominated, which honestly I think is great because it's kind of hilarious that his.
Yeah. But also he was great.
Like, he was great.
I give him full credit.
Like, I mean, truly, great. No one else could have done that role.
And to take on that being who you are being and being secure enough to take that on.
Yeah, and like the way he's dealt with everything post, you know, like all the hype and everything. And then also his like comments about all of this. But like to not
Christine nominate... knows that he's not my favorite.
Leah and I have very different opinions.
But on this we can agree.
But to not nominate Greta Gerwig... absolutely mind-blowing to me. Like,
how... Did she get nominated for Little Women?
No.
Oh, Lord.
And this is the thing. So she did Lady Bird, which was
amazing. Yeah, that was really
good. I love Lady Bird so much. Lady Bird. Excuse me. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my gosh. The seltzer's hit.
The seltzer's hit and the hype. Okay, so Lady Bird is fantastic.
Chrissy is also up on a pedestal right now. Your pedestal is high.
It is. Amazing. So high right now. And then Little Women, her Little Women was amazing. I have a whole thesis I could talk about her Little Women version. It was fantastic. But she did the indie movie with Lady Bird. She did the adaptation of a historical novel. These are both like Oscar darlings, right? Mm-hmm. Neither of them get nominated. And then she does this like incredible blockbuster. And not only do they decide to make it an adaptation screenplay, which is nonsense to me, but they also don't nominate her for director. I was just like...
Why was it an adaptation? Because it came from the doll?
A doll. It's not an adaptation. There was a doll that existed and she created an entire story and world about it.
Right.
Like, how is this an adaptation? But
yeah,
it just, I don't know. It just really feels like...
So who is not? I actually will confess that I haven't looked at who's nominated officially. I've just looked at the controversies, but I'm guessing it's Scorsese and Christopher Nolan. Scorsese,
obviously, yeah. Christopher Nolan. I don't know who the others are. I know there's
those two. I think should be in there. But
I will also say there are two nominations that I really feel like are important to highlight, and one of them is the first Native American. They were nominated for something, and I don't know which category it is.
Oh, it's the supporting actress. It's the girl who's in the one with Scorsese, The Moon.
Oh yeah, that one.
Moonflower. Like,
yeah. Love that.
She won the Golden Globe. She's the first Native person to win, at least Native woman. No, I think it was first Native person to win the Golden first Globe. First
Native person. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's fantastic. Again, so happy for America Ferreira, but like. Oh,
I've seen so many memes like this is exactly what Ken got nominated and not Barbie. This is exactly what the Barbie movie is about.
Yeah, so it's Martin Scorsese, Christopher Nolan.
Okay.
I don't know who these other people are, if I'm being very honest with you.
Is Miyazaki in there? Because he won for the animated.
No.
The Boy in the Run. Okay.
Justine Triet, Anatomy of a Fall. I don't know anything about that.
That one won at Golden Globes. I watched the Golden Globes, so yeah.
That helps, yeah. Poor Things was nominated for the directing.
Okay, yeah.
I want to see that movie. It looks interesting.
I do too. I do too. Yeah.
And then Jonathan Glazer for Zone of Interest.
I've never heard of that.
I've never heard of that, but like I'm not. But one of the
I'm not hip with the movies.
I haven't had a great couple of months, so I haven't been paying attention to things, but.
The Anatomy of a Fall won some stuff, and also Poor Things won some stuff.
Yeah,
and Emma Stone won for that as well.
But it is a thing that I keep talking about with a lot of people is that we have this kind of notion of some stuff being not worth or not valuable just because it's popular. And I used to be this like massive contrarian. Anything that was too popular, I immediately hated. So. Let me just start out
being a hipster.
Yes.
I can laugh because I was too.
I am a reformed contrarian. I am still a hipster. It's fine.
Except on some things that Christy and I don't agree on. And then we both revert back to hips, like Ryan Gosling.
I mean, I'm still a hipster. That's a part of me that will never go away. Yeah. But I have a whole corner of my house that's dedicated to records and vinyls.
So. There you go. Me too. That's why we're friends.
But like, I think that sometimes when we start saying that stuff is popular, so it must be trash, like it's just snobbery, you know?
But do you think it was popular, or I thought it was more the message?
Oh, I'm sure it's all of it. Like,
I thought it would be more like the female aspect.
I just think that they're mad that it got so popular, honestly. Like,
well, what was the movie? The Silence. It could have been the Freedom. Silence of Freedom.
Oh, geez, that thing.
I don't know. I didn't watch it.
No, don't.
But I'm going to watch it, actually, because I did get called out the other day for being a contrarian about sort of that world, and I'm going to watch it.
Okay. Well, you...
I'll tell you about
it. You tell us about it. But yeah, because and this is part of my, like, my reform contrarianness. One of the other things that I've started doing more recently is trying to read more, like, popular-level books, stuff that's just for fun, instead of like being like, oh, I can only read what I would read in an English class, you know? And it's interesting to think about how much value comes out of those things, and then we call them like guilty pleasures or whatever.
Beach books,
they can actually be significant, and honestly, we should probably pay attention to them, because more people consume that stuff than the snobby things that we do. And so that's my Oscar rant.
Yeah. I am interested that your perspective is that it's because of the popular thing, because I just read it as being completely just
misogynistic. I think it's both things, really.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's why I was interested to hear your opinion, because I think you are right. And they do tend to take themselves quite seriously, too seriously. But I mean, here's what I will be interested in, is that if, because I don't know who's nominated against, Ryan Gosling wins, or even America Ferrera, who I thought did a great job.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. If they win, if they will accept the award, because actually I think that would be quite telling, and I wouldn't want to like diminish anyone's ability to celebrate this highest award, but especially with Ryan Gosling, because he came out with that sort of statement, that there would be no Barbie without
I think
Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig.
Yeah,
it's in America Ferrera. I don't know if she's put out a statement. I haven't read it, but
she has said some things, and hers was also a very same vein of like, they were brilliant, blah, 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 you know, that kind of stuff. I feel bad for her, because people keep forgetting that she was nominated. And so they say incorrectly, like, Ken was nominated, but no women. Something, okay. And I'm like, we need to
get, I wonder why they nominated her and not, I mean, I should adore her,
I adore like, her, but like, yeah,
but she's not the title character. I don't,
it's it is confusing, because it's literally Barbie, and Barbie,
it's called Barbie. Yeah. And but also, like, it was, do you think it was just like a like a little carrot, just to be like, oh,
I do. Okay. So he's up again. He's an actor in a supporting role, and he's up against Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction, which I also did not know about.
I don't know what that is. Yeah.
Robert De Niro, Robert Downey Jr., and Mark Ruffalo. Ryan's not winning. Like,
no, he's. Although I did predict very wrongly the college football championship, I would predict Robert Downey Jr. He won the Golden Globe, I think, for that.
Did he?
For Oppenheimer, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he did a really good job in Oppenheimer.
He did.
I haven't seen any of the others, so I can't comment on that. But I would be more curious to see what Ryan would do if he won, which he's not going to, but if he won, I think America Ferrera will just be like, yes, I'm accepting this, which she should.
Well, and it sucks because, I'm of two minds, because I'm like, it clearly is such an injustice, but then you're nominated.
I know, right?
You know? It's and really you're like, hard. And I want her to win. And him too. Like,
same.
But then I also, that, like, I don't want to diminish their role. I just want to add other people.
Yeah. Ooh, but you know what? I haven't seen it. I keep meaning to go, and I might have missed my chance, but The Color Purple, because Danielle Brooke nominated for The Color Purple for actress in the supporting role.
Yeah. I think she won the Golden Globe, and then Emma Stone won for
Poor Things.
Lead. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, and don't hold me to that. But I think she did win for
because Lily Gladstone won for...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Lily Gladstone, yes. That's the native one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just...
Oh, but they have... At Golden Globes, they have drama. They have categories. Oh, so I think it was musical. Yeah, I think it was musical. Up
against each other. Okay.
That's right. Yeah, so I think she did win for that, yeah.
I didn't look, but... Is I'm Just Ken nominated for song?
Well, didn't he have thoughts about that?
It is.
Or was it a Golden Globe? I don't remember.
He had I'm Just Ken was nominated. They won the Golden Globe. I desperately need for them to have a I'm Just Ken performance at the Oscars. Like, I think that would be the only reason I would watch.
I saw an interview on the Tickery Talks where he talked about that, and he was just like, well, they haven't asked me.
I know, but that was before I got nominated, and they usually do have them.
Will he do that?
There are two Barbie songs nominated for music.
Is it Dua Lipa? No, Billie Eilish.
No, it's Billie Eilish.
Oh, my God. That song destroyed. If I hear that song on a TikTok or something, I'm like, I can't listen to whatever's happening.
I'm just like, I don't know.
There's going to be a sad dog or something. And I just am like, nope, I'm out. And seeing her on SNL. And she's such a talent.
She did a great job. Also, I don't know if you've heard her talk about like the specifics of how she sings the song, but like, she talks about like the fact, like the way she sings it, that like kind of breathy, is like very intentional. And it was really interesting to hear her talk about it because I never really thought about it before.
Well, you know what? Here's what I think about the whole thing, Christy. Fuck the patriarchy.
Yes, agreed. Same.
I mean, it sucks. Like, I hate it. Like, here's the deal. I think Margot Robbie was amazing. If she'd gotten snubbed, though, and Greta Gerwig had gotten nominated, I wouldn't be that mad about it.
No.
Because I think she's cool with... I think Margot Robbie's going to...
She's going to be fine.
She's going to be fine. And I think...
I'm mad about it.
I'm mad about it for Greta, too, because I think she's... One of the things about the Oscars that they always say is you have to earn your stripes, right? Like, you have to do several things to prove that you're just not a one-time.
Yeah, but she has, and that's...
That's what I'm saying.
Like, and it's like she's checked every box they could possibly give in. And it makes me so mad, especially because I think, I mean, ultimately, if I was to say, like...
Especially because you and I have not even heard of that one cat. I mean, you're not going to be nominated. You know, here's the deal. The Christopher Nolans and the Scorsese of the world, they're going to get up there.
Yeah. They already have like 17.
They do, but that's it. They're going to, it's like, what's her fate? Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
She's going to be, Meryl Streep shows up and I'm not even sure what she was in sometimes.
I know.
She was in the Golden Globe. She was at the Golden Globes. I was like, what were you in, Meryl?
Because it's Meryl Streep cat. Like, they just have to give her an award.
There's something.
It's a part of the yearly requirement, which is fine. I love Meryl Streep.
I do, too. I'm not mad about it, but I'm just saying she's going to be there.
But, like, I think that Greta Gerwig is, like, one of my very top directors. I think, like, the three movies have been just so impactful for me. And I'm like, I'm very mad about it. That's where it is. That's my gripe.
I have made comments to you subtly, not so subtly, about my love of The Little Women, old school. But I just love Winona Ryder.
Oh, me too.
Is it Claire Danes?
Like, if you want a very long, passionate gripe, Little Women and I have a history. Like, this is a...
Oh, and what's her face in it too? The little vampire. What's her name? She's not a little vampire.
Are you talking about Kristen Dunst?
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst. Who's, by the way, my age.
Also, can I just say that her role in Interview with a Vampire is not what she's most known for.
I know, but it's just what came to my brain. It's called 8%. It's called 8% seltzer.
Truly,
the little vampire.
Little vampire. And I love that I knew exactly what you meant.
Yeah. Oh, Sofia Coppola also won that. I wonder if she's been nominated.
I love that version of Little Women. I do. Christian Bale, fantastic.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
But like, and like I've read Little Women countless number of times. And it's, again, it's the whole long thing, but like, there's a part of it that I, every time, would just get so mad. Hey,
whoa. Sorry. God, you'd think Penny was a freaking guard dog.
Also griping about it. Hey, come here.
Penelope.
You can't bark right now. No.
Penelope. Your mom is trying to go on a feminist diatribe right now.
To go on a rant. But
her rant. It's January. Let her be.
And so I love everything. I love the very oldest of the Little Women movies, the like really, really old one.
I don't think I've seen that.
But Greta Gerwig's Little Women was the one that made me like Amy. And it was like we had a healing moment, Little Women and I. And I was like, oh my goodness.
I appreciate her speech about the money.
Yeah.
But like, she still burnt that manuscript, which means she's dead to me.
I mean, fair, absolutely fair. Because
can you imagine that was your dissertation and there was no computer?
Would
you like her then?
How many copies of your dissertation, or how many backups did you have?
Oh my god, so many. Final three.
Well, I had it. Yeah, no, I had so many, but I also had it on an external hard drive. Mm-hmm. I had it on Dropbox. I had it on iCloud.
Nice.
And then I would like occasionally just email it to something.
Yeah. But imagine Amy took that.
Imagine.
And then later she burned it up.
She burned the internet.
She came up to you and she was like, but women can't make money. I made her Scarlett O'Hara for some reason. Women can't make money and we've got to blah, blah, blah. And even if I have kids, they're my kids. And you'd be like, you burnt my mother. Sit down and shut up. It just gets me every time. And I love Florence Pugh. Fantastic. The little vampire. But I just...
You just can't.
I can't get over it.
Little vampire.
It hurts my soul. Christy, do you think we've gone for enough?
Yeah, I think we've enough gripes for the day.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to our two gripes. And we're really happy to be back.
We're so happy to be back. We're happy to have you guys
come. Yeah, we had a good, if not restful, time. And now we're here and it's January. So join us in this January.
Join us in this never ending January.
Next time you hear from us, it'll probably still be January. So, sorry.
It'll be January 76th.
Tell your students, I'm sorry. But their papers aren't due yet.
So. No.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.